Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face, and I'll say it to you now.
Come on down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
It says a lot about Manchester United's season that they lost to their biggest rivals 9-0 over their two matches. And still, neither of those games will end up as their most embarrassing of the season. That honour goes to Saturday's 4-0 defeat to Brighton. A humiliating defeat, even in the words of their own manager. A match in which Brighton racked up a quarter of their goal tally for the whole season at home in just this 190 minutes of football. Yes, a team that had scored only 12 goals at home were suddenly scoring with such ease that they appeared to shock themselves. At 4-0 up, Alexis McAllister strolled into the United box to get on the end of yet another move, but seemed to forget the last bit of just kicking the ball into the empty net, as though he had slowed his own body down just to get on the same wavelength as the United defending. Watching it unfold, I couldn't help think of my Manchester United supporting mate, Kieran Murphy, and asking, is today the day he finally puts some respect on the name of the Brighton manager, Graham Potter? Welcome to Monday's Second Caps Football Podcast. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
And who's that? Who's that on the other? No, he couldn't even front up. After all his Graham Potter bashing all season, talking about all the draws that Potter gets and yet gets praised for, the day that he sticks it to Manchester United, Kieran Murphy doesn't have the balls to step up.
Nowhere to be seen.
And accept what's coming to him.
Nowhere to be seen. Incredible stuff.
A bit like the United defenders the other day, could be said. Boom, boom.
Whoa. Absolutely hotter than a pistol today. What a performance. I have to say, Owen, it is testament to the enduring appeal of the Manchester United brand that they somehow have topped the billing this Monday morning.
Really, there's a lot more going on with much greater relevance to what's happening in the league. But it is quite funny. Just the nature of their goal, just all the little statistics, the one that I've already given about the quarter of the, basically going from 12 goals at home to 16 goals in one match, Brighton. And just the man of them, Pascal Gross scores his first goal of the season. Cucurella scores his first ever goal for Brighton. All the Olays before the fourth goal, I think it was. Even that miss by McAllister that I just thought was hilarious. It was almost like it was too easy. Jeepers.
Brighton are in a situation. Brighton obviously have had a really good season. You know, Jonathan Wilson, you know, I think he said before the season, he ventured that the opinion that Brighton could finish as high as 12th. Well, guess what? They're 9th.
Yeah, Ken. And guess what else? They're within 11 points of Man United with a game in hand. So let's not rule that out.
Yeah, they are. We literally can rule that out, Owen.
Mathematically, they could still overhaul Man United if they win their last four games.
We can rule that out. But they've played 36 Premier League games. They've played 41 games. How many games have they scored four goals in?
One
game, Owen. How many games have they scored as many as three goals in out of their 41? No, Owen, they've done that twice. They did it to what? They beat Wolves 3-0 and they beat Everton 3-2. But otherwise they've never, you know, to score four goals and as you mentioned, you know, there were simple chances which they then failed to add to. It's just honestly, and you know, you see Ronaldo laughing at the team.
Oh yeah.
And
about that bit.
And then you go online and you see people just going, where'd we be without him? where would this team be without Ronaldo? So anyway, again, we're not, you know, we're not going to waste any more time talking about
that. We're doing enough there. Look, Murph's not here, that's all we're saying.
Like, it's as bad. It's as bad as they've ever been. You know, they are going to get their lowest ever. It has been confirmed. This is going to be the lowest ever tally in the Premier League, you know. And I suppose we've seen it coming from a while off, I should say, that, you know, it was going to be that type of season. But just how bad it's actually been is really, you know, it's worth further discussion on some other time.
Jack Pitbrook and John Bruin on the show today to talk about some non-Manchester United topics. Later on in the week, we're going to London, baby. We're going to be podcasting from London from Wednesday to Friday this week, including our big live show at the Earth Theatre in Hackney on Thursday night. Thank you so much to our London gang who've snapped up every available ticket for that one. We'll see you in a few days' time. And to hear all the best bits from London, you just need to be a World Service member, obviously. So you can do that now if you're not already on secondcaptains.com. Costs just €5 a month plus VAT, depending on whereabouts in the world you're listening from. Ken, report on sport, please.
Two managers, both alike in dignity, this weekend, which is to say, not very dignified. Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola both had things to say after their teams' respective games. The game for Klopp was a lot more disappointing, which maybe is why the Liverpool lip couldn't resist his the opportunity to put the boot in on Antonio Conte, an honest young manager. He'd come up to Liverpool with his team, you know, and set them out in absolutely the best way that he knew how. And to be honest, had got a great result and could have won the game. I mean, as Conte said, you know, I see disappointment in the eyes of my players. Tottenham could have won the game. It was very even chance wise. You know, I'd say Tottenham had the better chances. In fact, you know, expected goals would slightly disagree with me, but you know, it was pretty much level on that measure.
The eye test, you're choosing the eye test over expected goals today.
Yeah, you know, I thought there was, I mean, okay, there weren't too many more chances aside from the simple one that Son scored, but you got the sense that a chance was only a half second away. You know, we were talking about that, the mind game Liverpool defending, you know, that the non-contact, non-interventionist positional defending. You know, can this defensive line catch you offside without actually having to do anything? But what happens if that doesn't happen? Then suddenly it's, oh no, you know, the cat is very much amongst the pigeons here, as it was for Tottenham's goal. Liverpool obviously got back into it with a deflected goal by Luis Diaz, but it was one of those games where, you know, they were like, there was crazy crossing statistics, you know, but lots of inaccurate crosses, lots of balls that sort of seem to just float over everyone in the box and bounce out for a goal kick. And every time it bounces for a goal kick, it's like, well, there goes another 6 minutes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was one of those types of games where I think just the sheer kind of relentless slog that they've been in was catching up with them. And against a team like Tottenham, who are just so sharp at exploiting any little mistakes at the back, any of these little gaps, they weren't good enough.
Well, there are two questions there about what Klopp said. So do you think he's right in the way he characterised Spurs' approach?
Well, what did he actually say?
And do you also think it's fair of him to say what he said?
Well, what he said, first of all, was, I think they're world-class and they should be doing more for the game. He said, I don't like it, but that's my problem. I can't coach it. That's why I cannot do it. But he then, I respect everything they do. You know, fine, they're world-class players, block all the balls, very difficult. Atletico Madrid is brilliant, fine, whatever. It's just, I can't. I respect everything they do, but it's not me. And then he made another point about Tottenham. They drew against Arsenal, won against City, I think, against Chelsea as well. Did they win against Chelsea? Actually, no, they didn't win against Chelsea. They lost four matches against Chelsea this season because they lost to them in the Carabao Cup as well as the league. But they did beat City. They did the double. They did the double against Manchester City. Klopp said, so the game plan works for these games. Well, not for the Chelsea games. But they're still fifth. So that's how it is. It's really a tough one. So he's suggesting there that basically there's a ceiling to how high you can go with Antonio Conte tactics, right? And I think, Owen, that this is one of the most ridiculous things I've heard Jurgen Klopp say in a number of ways. Well, first of all, on a very pedantic point, Antonio Conte hasn't managed Tottenham this whole season. They were managed initially by Nuno Espirito Santo, and Conte only came in sort of mid-season, And actually, I probably should have looked at this before I opened my mouth on this, but I think based on their results since Conte came in, Tottenham are, you know, if you look at the league since then, I think Tottenham are in the top four.
Oh, so they've actually burst through that ceiling.
What is the ceiling? You know, if the ceiling is, are they going to win the league? Then no. But, you know, Tottenham don't have a squad that's capable of winning the league at the moment. I mean, everyone accepts that. You know, Jurgen Klopp could go to Tottenham and play, you know, dream heavy metal attacking football or whatever and not win the league. No one's going to win the league with that current Tottenham team. You know, that shouldn't be the standard for Conte this season. But more generally about Conte, there's no ceiling. Like, Antonio Conte has proved repeatedly that he can win titles with this style of play. He's proved it in Italy. I mean, how many titles has he won in Italy? He's at 4 titles now, 3 with Juventus, and I'm not sure if he actually won 3 titles with Juventus, but he definitely won one with Inter last season.
Just checking here, it's 3 with Juve and then the Inter one.
3 with Juventus and then another with Inter with 91 points and another in England with Chelsea when he wasn't expected to do it, when they had a pretty bad start to the season until he decided to rejig the team away from their previous style towards his style. And they got, I think, 93 points that season, which is more points than Liverpool are going to get this season. You know, playing Thiago ball, like, you know, so it doesn't, it makes no sense to say this about Conte. What Conte does works. Now, is Conte, now I know that you can say, well, you might be thinking, well, hang on, were you not criticizing Frank Lampard and Everton for being defensive and sitting back, blah, blah, blah. But what Conte is doing is not that. I mean, it is that, but it's stupid to characterize what they do as, as Klopp says here, block all the balls, you know, sit back. That is what they're doing. Yes, that is what they're doing when you've got the ball. But when they've got, watch what they're doing when they've got the ball. Maybe it doesn't happen that often, but when they've got the ball, what you're seeing is a really, really organized team that has a lot of ideas, which the coach has drilled into them and which they're going to try and use to open you up and hurt you. And yeah, I don't think there was a better example of it of a training ground goal all season than the one that Tottenham scored against Man City. It was not Son, it was Kulusevski. Remember that when they beat Man City? And it was just like an absolute, it was like a clockwork mechanism, or, you know, sort of, it was completely choreographed and pre-programmed, and Man City couldn't do anything about it. You know, or rather, Man City didn't recognize what was happening until it was too late to do anything about it. Like a ball from, I can't remember if it was actually Lloris or someone else who passed it to Ben Davis. Ben Davis is sort of left back. He's actually a center back in this, left center back, but he then plays a quick ball into midfield. And what's happened in midfield is that Son, who maybe initially looked like he might be the target for the type of pass that Ben Davis is playing, has made a curved run, starts running towards Davis and then peels back and is now running into the City half. And Harry Kane has moved into the space that Son has vacated. This has taken Rodri out of the game. Rodri is like the guy who makes City's whole midfield work. The ball goes to Kane, immediate ball through to Son. And Son knows that Kulusevski on the other side is going to be running with him and doesn't even really have to look to know that there's a player there in support that he can lay it off to tap it in. Like, it was, you know, it was a brilliant goal, and it was a very, very typically Antonio Conte moment. What I think elevates Conte above a manager like, say, Jose Mourinho, who has in his time managed some of the same teams. He's won titles, you know, with Inter, with Chelsea, with Real Madrid, and he also is a guy who has obtained high points totals and scored a lot of goals, similar to the Conte teams. In those cases, I tend to think, well, you know, if you have Ronaldo in the Spanish league, you will score a lot of goals and you will, you know what I mean. But what I feel the difference between his teams and Conte's is I don't see with Mourinho's teams the evidence of this type of choreographed build up play. When you've got the ball, how do you, in just a couple of passes, create a good chance for your strikers? That's literally what Conte is thinking about the whole time. And I feel like his teams can consistently do that. Whereas with Mourinho, and they don't play, like Klopp is saying, okay, it's fine to play like that against us, you know, but like, good luck to you against Burnley or whatever. That's the That's the logic of what Klopp is saying. But they don't play the same way in those games. This is the point. Conte will change the approach when they're playing against a team that isn't going to have the ball and is going to sit back and try and defend the space. He'll change it, which I think makes him more flexible than, you know, some of these Mourinho or whatever I was talking about.
Yeah, I think it would also be madness not to use, if you've got Harry Kane and Son in your team, it'd be madness not to devise some sort of plan to get them released on the counter-attack. You know, whatever about comparisons to Mourinho. Like, Klopp is being sore. Obviously, I agree with you in the sense that I don't think it stacks up. I don't think it's much of a, you know, I don't think it's exactly, I would say Conte would be actually quite happy hearing that. I don't know. I'd say it's like, okay, I've got under his skin here. He knows what's happened and we know what's happened. We've gotten the deserved point and he's just being a bit of a sore loser.
Absolutely. And you know, when Jurgen Klopp is sitting down at the end of this season, with not Michael Edwards, his now departing sporting director, but is it Julian Ward, the successor? And they've got to figure out why didn't we win the league this year? You got to look at their results against the best teams. You know, I mean, you could say, well, you know, throwing away a two-goal lead against Brighton at home? That was not a good moment. But really, they didn't beat Chelsea, they didn't beat Man City, and they didn't beat Tottenham at any point. You know, six games, six draws, and you know, that's just not good enough, really. I mean, you're going to have to, at some point, you have to kind of take advantage of these games against your rivals. You have to sort of put the boot down in those games.
It used to be good enough, you know, six games, six draws. Six wins, six draws sounds actually quite impressive, but obviously we know it's not in the mindset in this era of Manchester City. You basically can't afford to drop those sort of points. But just an email from Daniel Turpin on this. Last week, please have a few minutes on Neville's contention that Klopp's bitter comments after the Spurs game prove United were right not to go for Conte. Honestly, I wonder, is Neville part of the problem and not the solution? The level of delusion is a sight to behold. Guess it's just a Man United thing, says Daniel.
Well, I felt that Gary Neville was just sort of opportunistically sort of stovepiping an event, like, or he was kind of taking advantage of something which happened to suit him in the moment. You know, the fact that Klopp was denigrating Conte in this way and suggesting this isn't really suitable for a top team or whatever. And Neville, I don't remember Neville spelling it out in the same terms that Klopp has used when he was saying he wouldn't have Conte. He you know, he'd speak about it in quite a vague way. He's not a Man United manager. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, he's not literally a Man United manager, but what does that actually mean? You know, and I don't think Neville really said it as clearly or made the same case that Klopp has. I think he was just sort of saying, well, look, you know, Klopp says it and, you know, he's good, isn't he? So Carragher then pointed out to Neville, well, hang on, you've been demanding Simeone, but Conte is too negative or whatever. I mean, Simeone literally, Klopp mentioned Atletico Madrid in the same sort of, in the same breath as he was criticizing Conte the other night. And Neville sort of said, well, that's different, 4-4-2, you know, that's United. So I don't know if it's, I mean, is he part of the problem? I mean, I'm not going to say Gary Neville is part of the problem at Man United, but definitely the media noise around the club has been a big problem, definitely.
We were spared the 90 minutes of Gary Neville on co-commentary. If that had been a Sunday game, or if Neville had been on co-commentary, and instead it was Alan Smith, who was, you know, for all his strengths as a commentator, isn't going to... But people probably don't get as worked up about anything Alan Smith is going to say about Manchester United as Gary Neville. He's calling them spineless and all the rest of it.
Yeah, he doesn't get as worked up either, Alan Smith.
That's the other point, yeah. He's a bit more calm about it.
But so, I mean, United are a team, obviously, who are exquisitely attuned to everything that's been said about them. You know, like, it seems like most of the club is... you know the way like an animal's brain or whatever has like larger parts devoted to the bits that like a dog, the part of a dog's brain that's devoted to smell is like, you know, much bigger. Well, the United brain is like mostly just attuned to what are people saying about us on social media. Yeah. And so that's obviously loudly conditioned or largely conditioned by, you know, Neville is one of the loudest voices sort of setting the agenda there. And United's problem, I think, has been a failure to have any sort of private or internal standards by which to judge what they're doing, such that they always seem to be taking their direction from, oh, what are people saying about us today? You know what I mean? Well, this is the Twitter digest, or this is what's been said about us. This is the discourse today. Like, what can we do? Which has led to this sort of constant sort of short-termism and blah, blah, blah. You know, they haven't really had like a way of saying, look, are we actually doing well, despite what everyone outside the club thinks? Are we doing this well? Are we doing that well? That's where they've been falling down. Maybe this is what Erik ten Hag is going to change. Anyway, as I said, we're not going to talk about that.
We're down the Man United rabbit hole again. Yeah, what about City then? What about this other manager who was talking smack this weekend?
Well, I mean, here is Pep Guardiola. I watched Guardiola's conference on Friday, which was very interesting. And, you know, we can talk about some of the stuff he mentioned, because he got quite philosophical in that. But in the aftermath of the 5-0 win against Newcastle, very disappointing, I thought, you know, considering their good results under Eddie Howe. But if you look at the good results under Eddie Howe, have all been against sort of, you know, they've killed a lot of rabbits, Newcastle. They've got a belt full of rabbit skins. But every time they play against a big one of the top six, they lose. It's 10 defeats in 11, which is very Bournemouth. Type of record, but 5-0 it was. A good result for Manchester City, but afterwards Pep Guardiola only had one thing on his mind.
About 1 week ago, nobody, even being in front, everyone in this country support Liverpool, the media and everyone. So, of course, because Liverpool has an incredible history behind in Europe competitions and not in Premier Leagues, because won one in 30 years, but it's not problem at all. So, the situation is what it is. We have to do nine points or maybe six right now. It depends on what's going to happen next two games in terms of goal difference. But now it's Wednesday, is the real, 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 real final for us.
So, I mean, is this a mind game? I'm not sure. How would you... what do you think Pep's up to here? Why is he saying this?
I think, I don't know if it's a mind game. He might genuinely feel it, which doesn't mean it's correct.
Well, I imagine City's marketing department have to be onto him saying, Pep, you got to shut up. Like, why do you keep saying they've got way more fans than us, everyone supports them? Because we made 70 million more than them in sponsorship last year. So, you know, like it sort of makes our position look strange. You know, apparently there's a team that's got way more supporters than us and everyone supports but we're the much hotter commercial property.
Well, he's talking more in the media, right? And the ex-players and all that.
Well, he said everyone in the country, and also around. He goes on, actually, because the journalist there for BN Sports asked him again, are you serious? Do you really believe this?
Liverpool alongside United is the most important teams I've done in all history in terms of titles, legacies, history, dramas. For many, many things. But we are, since the last 10, 11, 12 years, being there. I know we are sometimes uncomfortable, but I don't care. If the people want more win Liverpool than us, it's not the issue, it's normal. So maybe I'm more supporters in all around the world, for sure, and here in England, support more Liverpool than us, but this is not the question. The question is, today, before the start of the game, the people cheering and supporting us, I think more than ever in one home game, because they know that even being out for the Champions League, we can rely on these players, and the support was amazing, and hopefully we can arrive in the last game here with a chance, you know, to be champion.
Yeah, okay, but he is talking about supporters around the world there, not just yeah. People in TV studios.
Well, you know, Liverpool obviously do have more supporters than Manchester City. I mean, this is obvious. But I think they also have more haters than Manchester City, you know, in the sense that, like...
Oh, do they?
Oh, I think so. Oh, absolutely.
Man City have a lot of haters.
Oh, I think, I mean, come on. Do you think that
Man City have a lot? Man City have a lot of people writing articles about how they're not a great team, as I saw in the Irish Times this morning, about how they don't make journalists feel anything.
Well, that was me
in the Irish Times a few months ago, and that's just present company included.
Well, look, okay. I mean, you seem to be you're bringing up historical stuff.
Well, one was just this morning. I read it 15 minutes ago. But
you've dredged up historical articles. You've dredged up historical articles, but what I would say is that what do you think about that? Do you think that you need to win the Champions League to be a great team? Because this was what Pep was getting into in his press conference on Friday. He was kind of like, look, if people want to say we're failures because we didn't win the Champions League, fine, it's totally wrong. You know, I don't accept it I accept it, but I totally disagree with it. Now, to say Manchester City, this team and these managers are failures, it's clearly nonsense. They're not failures. I mean, they're top manager, top players, and so on and so forth. But if they don't win the Champions League, if Guardiola doesn't win it in his time at the club, is that a failure?
It's a failure. There are two different questions. Yeah, yes. That is a failure. But the first question asks is, are they a great team? Yeah, I think they are a great team.
Well, why don't they
forget
improve
the Champions
it?
League and feel the points totals?
Yeah,
in
yeah,
the
yeah.
Premier League.
Just weigh the points total. Yeah, I mean, but like this, I think this is kind of an interesting element of this debate. I mean, and I know the debate is a bit like is a bit. You get people who have won the Champions League saying, "Oh, the Champions League is more important," and people who have mainly won the league saying, "Oh, the league is more important."
No, but do you need to win the Champions League to be a great team? Is what you're asking there?
I mean, I don't, yeah, like Brazil, was the Brazil
Inter Milan
1970 team.
A great team was the Porto
no,
team.
No, no, no. That's the other way around, though. That's the other way around. That's like saying, are you automatically a great team if you win the Champions League? And the answer is no. I mean, you know, then, you know, because there are some fairly ordinary teams that have managed to do that. You know, I mean, I think of the Chelsea team that won it the first time around in 2012. You know, they finished fifth in the league, I think. You know, Liverpool did the same thing in 2005. Real Madrid, you know, won the Champions League in 2000 with the team, I think, that again finished fifth. You know, this sort of thing has happened a few times. I don't think that necessarily winning it automatically, say, oh, well, you're great, you know, we'll put that badge on you. But I do feel that if you want to be considered a great team, and in the fullness of time, you know, such that when you're looking back, when you look back from the sort of historic point of view, that's what counts. I mean, that's what... If you haven't done that, then people are like, well, why not? Why didn't they do it? They couldn't have been that good.
This is another way of framing the debate that was on Sky yesterday about what's more important, Premier League or Champions League. Would you consider the Liverpool team a great team, regardless of whether or not they win the Champions League final this year? Because they have won it.
I think history will say yes.
Even though Man City keep finding a way, bar one season,
to lose in the Champions League?
Yeah,
apart from the
hold this Liverpool team off. If you're saying this Liverpool team is a great team, and yet Man City almost every year finish above them in the Premier League, by definition, surely that makes Manchester City a great team.
Well, they need to prove it. You know, they need to actually win, because this goes back to a question about sport. Like Guardiola was talking about, why does this happen to us and not in the Premier League? And we're it was just sort of back to normal in the Premier League. You're 5-0 against Newcastle. Like, they've scored 17 goals in the last four matches in the Premier League. So this is how they've turned the goal difference completely. They've just absolutely combine harvested a series of teams. You know, and we've seen them do this so much. And yet this they seize up against Real Madrid. And Guardiola's like, well, in the Premier League, the players know you're going to have another game and another game and another game. But in this competition, meaning the Champions League, then he starts tapping his watch and he's like, you know, it's time, and then, you know, it happens immediately, and you know, and it's kind of the implication that I sometimes get from Guardiola or from people at City. Like, I saw De Bruyne talking about this, and I've seen Roy Keane actually make a similar point recently. He was arguing with Carragher about it a few weeks back, saying, look, the league is the most important. The league is week in, week out. You know, it's what you do. It's like the standards you set. That's why it's the biggest competition to win. And I'm kind of like, is it though? Is that really what we're measuring? De Bruyne made this similar point. Look, the league is, you know, we're there. For me, it's the league first, then the Champions League. Although he did then say in the same interview, I'd rather win the Champions League now because I haven't won it. But in terms of what he considered more important, the league, because again, it was this idea of kind of consistency. But like, consistency is not consistency is one aspect, I think, of greatness. It's not like, is it even the main one? Is it the main one? I mean, were people saying, you know, we can't consider Muhammad Ali great until he beats George Foreman week in, week out? No. Like, I mean...
Boxing is the most ridiculous comparison when you fight once or twice a year.
But in all big times, I think all of the biggest moments, the biggest events in sport always have that element of... This is the moment. It has to happen here. It has to happen now. There is no next weekend. There is no, oh, we'll dust ourselves off and go again. This is the moment. This is when it has to happen. And that's what's being measured in these Champions League games. Now, I know there is another moment. It comes next year. You know, the Champions League is an annual competition. It still feels a long way off on the night, right? You know what I mean? It's not like the World Cup or the Olympics where it's 4 years, but it's not like a league competition either. Like I just feel as though
but it's like you're almost punishing Manchester City in your opinion there for the way the league is structured. You know, the league is structured to reward consistency, and they have shown their greatness in doing that. And in racking up those league titles, I don't feel they should necessarily be.
They have shown their greatness. They have shown their greatness in humdrum and the challenge of winning league games that don't have a lot of pressure on them.
Well, the game against Liverpool had huge pressure recently, and okay, they didn't actually win that.
They didn't win that, and they lost. They lost the cup game. They lost the cup game to Chelsea last season. They lost the Champions League final to Chelsea last season, and they're clearly a better team than Chelsea. But they still lost to them because they can't handle because of the pressure.
Guardiola's literally saying it. Can't handle the pressure.
But,
yeah,
but that's literally what Guardiola said. They know in the league, they know there's another game. Whereas in this, you know, the watch, the pressure. Oh no, it's gone. Oh, and then it's gone. Oh, you know. But it's like this. That does count against them. It suggests the kind of a limitedness, you know, an inability to cope with this. That's a problem.
They absolutely do. Like, I agree. I agree with a lot of what you're saying. They definitely need to win a Champions League to end this kind of conversation. And I think even if they just win one, of course, they've got none. So one is a lot better than that. At least then, it's just you can't throw that in them anymore, and that's gone. And all these theories would look dated at that point. But yeah, until they do it, I suppose you're gonna have your Kennerdys on here. Talking about their inability, the inability of this great team.
Because there's this whole thing, like Guardiola saying, like, if Jack scores, you know, then the team has character, but Courtois saves, so no character. Or, you know, if Ederson saves from Correa in the previous rounds, then, oh, the team has character, but if Correa scores, then, oh, it's no character. And so he's pointing to this sort of absurdity of, like, retrospectively saying this was a success, this was a failure, and actually the only difference between the two things is like a couple of centimeters. And you're like, yeah, but at the same time, that's kind of the linear reality we live in. Like, I mean, maybe there's a parallel universe in which you have won the Champions League, but like in the one that we all seem to be in, I mean, the one you haven't actually done it. You know, as head of the most. You know, he's not there to be like a kind of a guy, like a self-help guy who's like teaching people how to cope with like disappointment in life. You know, failure is an illusion, you know, treat these two impostors. That's not what Pep is paid 20 million a year for.
He's paid to deliver. What do you want him to say? He's in a press conference 2 days after losing that and the day before having to win a Premier League match. He's hardly going to say, yes, I am a failure. We are a bunch of losers in the Champions League and we might never win the whole thing and it's destroyed my
season. He didn't speak to the players, you know, after the thing. It was quite interesting actually that they said, right, so, you know, what have you said to the boys kind of thing. This was on Friday. Nothing. I was like, what, nothing really? And he said, yeah, no, I haven't talked to them. You know, what can I say? Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I mean, you could have tried to find the words. I'm sure they had a chat anyway in training that day, and you know, obviously they got back into the groove, comfortable enough against Newcastle. So we'll see what happens. But look, there's a lot of other stuff going on.
Go on.
A lot of other stuff. You know, we talked about Declan Rice. Declan Rice is one of the opponents coming up for Manchester City. There had been speculation that, you know, with the final, or rather with the game between West Ham and Manchester City, the final home game of the season for West Ham, coming so close before the Europa League final that David Moyes might, let's say, in, you know, I picked the team that was right for the game, sort of thing. But actually, that's not going to be a problem because West Ham are not in that final. This is their last home game. This is the last chance for them to commune with their supporters. This is the last chance for Declan Rice to show perhaps that he belongs on the on a bigger stage. After the chance to play in the you know, in Seville in the Europa League final was so cruelly stolen from him by the referee in Frankfurt. And we did mention his comments after the game where he was, I don't like having to listen to this other team singing and celebrating. But what we hadn't seen at that point was Tunnel Cam, which shows Declan Rice, and he'll be the voice that you hear here, storming in and trying to get to the referee and just to tell him what he thought of his performance.
Ref, it's so poor. All night, it's so bad. How can you be come that on, bad? Come on. Honestly, you've only been f***ing paid.
So there you go. So Rice then has put out like a thing on social media saying, oh, you know, that football can get like that. You know, I've moved on. And you're like, well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's necessarily up to you, but we'll see if anything arises from it. It is interesting, though, just the you know, to, that he would use the C word there about the referee. It is something I think we see a lot more of these days. Just open allegations of corruption. Did you see the Atletico Madrid banner?
Also false allegations. We should just stress there in case this recording ever ends up in the ears of the referee. But
yeah.
Like you said, we'll see if anything comes from Declan Rice. What were you going
to
say?
The only thing the major questionable moment in the game the referee had was trying to let Cresswell off with a yellow card for his professional foul. You know, and he was then like forced to reconsider that. And this is what Rice was already so angry with the ref in the first half. He got booked for dissent in the first half. And it was one of those where you can't hear what the players are saying, but you just knew from the way that Rice ran past the ref and said something to him, you're like, that's a booking. I don't even need to know what he said there to know that that was definitely a yellow card. But the Atletico fans strung up a banner on their stadium because there was this whole thing of, are they going to give a guard of honor to Real Madrid, who are the league champions? And Simeone was like, no, we're not going to do that. I think that's bullshit. Like he thinks guards of honor are bullshit, just like post-match handshakes and all this. And so they then put up a banner saying, between the press and the referees, they've had a 120-year-long guard of honor. was the banner saluting, or that the Atletico fans had put up for Madrid. Like their entire history has just been one long guard of honor with the authorities forming on either side and clapping them through. So that's just the way they felt about it. But we can't finish this without mentioning Super Frank Lampard.
Oh.
It looks like he's done it, Owen.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
No.
Well, I mean,
Coach Marsh's Leeds are taking on water fast, Owen.
They're taking on water. They are still just Burnley. 1 point behind Everton. But in fairness,
and a spare game.
Yeah. No, certainly they're in pole position now to roar back up to 15th place.
And I think Lampard was up to the Everton fans at the end of the game. I don't know if you saw it. It was sort of quite a protracted scene of Lampard going up and really giving it, you know, yes, we've done it. This was after their defeat of Leicester, which again was so more outstanding. Jordan Pickford saves, and you know, it was enough. So considering the state of the situation they were in like 2 matches ago, you know, that when it really looked as though they were the ones who were going to go down. Mm-hmm. He has done it. And what he has done, well, he hasn't done it yet, but it looks very much like he has. And it does seem as though the situation is creating a bond between Lampard and the hardcore Everton fans. You know, he's, you know, when you go through trial by fire, you know, it's a bit of... It's maybe something special is taking place on. We'll have to see if they stay up, but maybe it turns out this unlikely alliance has got a longer future than we suspected.
People are tweeting me stuff like, oh my God, he's a World Cup winner. Look, how many World Cups have you won?
Oh my God.
I'm like, David Silva, World Cup winner. I was at that World Cup.
I don't remember seeing much of David Silva.
I'm like, let's look up David Silva's World Cup record. David Silva, played like the first hour against Switzerland. What did he do in the next game? Didn't get on. What about the next game? Didn't get on. What about the second round? Didn't get on. What about the quarterfinal? Didn't get on. What about the semifinal? Oh, he didn't get on. What about the final? Can you believe it? He didn't get on. Now, if sitting on the sidelines, sitting on your arse in the sidelines, watching a team win the World Cup makes you a World Cup winner, then you're speaking to a five-time World Cup winner. So put some respect on my name. I've won 5 World Cups by David Silva's standards. 5. Too hot for TV for cheesy. Too many wanna be Harvey Easy. It's
all in together, going all out together. It don't take much. They are the problem. Humanity is the actual problem. If it wasn't for these insanely selfish, obscenely stupid creatures, this planet would actually be in balance.
Put some respect on my name. Get this shit to crack and got you
feeling with your pipes out. John Bruin and Jack Pitbrook on this week to talk about two managers, neither of whom lost in style, it could be said, at the weekend. Well, neither of them lost full stop, actually. Pep Guardiola had a comfortable win with Man City, and Liverpool only drew their game, but it's enough to pretty much blow the title. Jack, is that why you think Jurgen Klopp was so disparaging, or do you believe he was being disparaging when he seemed to critique Antonio Conte's game plan after the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that he was being disparaging. It was a classic example of the kind of football manager's disingenuous, I respect all styles of play, but type thing, which we have heard in the past from Guardiola. I mean, clearly the inference of what he said was, I would never play that way. It's far beneath me. It's also, you know, something that we have seen a bit in the past from Klopp. Like, as much as he is a, you know, a very warm, positive, great guy who commands huge amounts of love from the Liverpool fans and respect from people, he's also a really bad loser. I would say the worst loser in English football at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Do you not think, Ken?
I don't know if he's the absolute worst. He's definitely very bad, though. I agree with what you're saying. I mean, the idea that people have of him as this sort of warm and engaging character has a lot to do with winning nearly every week. If there was a few more games like Saturday night, we might have a slightly more mixed impression.
Well, yeah, because Liverpool is so good, it only comes out once or twice a year. But when it does, it's pretty obvious. And I think he was just obviously very pissed off about the result, the fact that it makes it much harder for Liverpool to catch City and to win the title, and therefore the quadruple is almost certainly off the cards. Because I actually think his criticisms of Tottenham were pretty kind of nonsense, really.
Do you think so? Yeah, why?
Well, I just think, I mean, one, it's not up to him how Tottenham play. Two, Tottenham don't just park the bus. They've scored a lot of goals since Conte's come in. And, like, what does he want them to do? Does he want them to just play high up the pitch and let Salah and Mane run in behind? You know, it's kind of a bizarre... It's just a really odd and weird thing for him to say. But, you know, lots of people say this. And my colleague Charlie Eccleshare, who actually asked the question which prompted Klopp's rant on Saturday's written a piece today, saying it's a bit like Arsene Wenger, who, of course, used to talk a bit like this when Arsenal lost. So it's nothing new in football, but it's always quite funny when you see it.
If you're Antonio Conte, John, could you see this as a backhanded compliment in some ways?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I wasn't mystified by the comments because, as Jack said and as Ken said, we have seen this from Jurgen Klopp. We used to see it a lot when he was at Dortmund, didn't we, towards the end of his time there, that final season, when things were going a little bit wrong, there were lots of those losses of tempers. I know Rafi Honigstein advised us all that we might see that when he came here. We haven't actually seen it that often, but that's because Liverpool have been so good over the last few years. But yeah, in terms of Conte, yeah, I mean, listen, I've seen a couple of their games recently. Tottenham, I saw them lose to Brighton, draw with Brentford. They were hugely disappointing in both those games. I don't think they got a shot on target 180 minutes. In this game, they could have actually won, of course, if Hjoberg hadn't have done what... I'm not quite sure what he was trying to do there, you know, when he sort of headed it back across goal. They could have won that game, and I think Conte might have been a little disappointed they didn't pull off a smash and grab, as you call it. I think listen, with Tottenham, I was just thinking about what's the difference between Tottenham now and Tottenham when they were very good under Poch. And I think there is that strength in midfield, really. They don't have a player like Moussa Dembele. And you're relying on Son, who's been brilliant this season. You're relying on Kane. And you're relying on your players digging in. And I think they did a pretty good job against Liverpool. You could say Liverpool looked a bit jaded, a bit lacking in ideas. And towards the end, Jurgen Klopp can talk about teams being negative against them, but there was an awful lot of getting it launched towards the end of that game, wasn't there, from Liverpool? So, you know, the route one is the, you know, and City did that against Real Madrid the week before. Get it launched is always the way. So, eventually everybody breaks down to that sort of football, don't they, in the end?
I'm trying to think, Ken, I know you're trying to come in there, but I'm trying to think of the rivals to Klopp for the worst losers. I mean, Tuchel, Pep, there's a few out there.
Well, I don't know if Pep, I mean, Pep is...
He lost with a fair bit of dignity about... the other night before he started laying loose.
I mean, I would say Conte.
Conte himself, yeah.
Conte's a pretty bad loser, and... you know, he's done more of it than he's used to with Tottenham. I mean, I know we were talking to you about this the last time you were on, Jack, but is there any more kind of updates yet on what he's going to do? I mean, I think in this particular instance, what Klopp was saying was basically sour grapes from him in the context of we've just blown the title and I wish this team had just got out of the way. You know, and I think that was sort of coming through a little bit. And, you know, when you look at Conte, I mean, Klopp mentioned that the good record they have. I mean, they beat City twice. Liverpool couldn't do that. But, you know, they're still 4 points behind Arsenal. And if they don't make it to the Champions League, and at the moment you'd have to say Arsenal are favourites to get there ahead of them. Is he, do you think, going to stick around, Jack? And just sort of supplement to that one is that since I think we spoke to you last time, the Haaland to City deal, I don't want to say it's confirmed, but it does look a lot like it. And if that happens, then that means the Kane to City deal, which dominated last summer, is probably not going to happen. So what do you think is in the future, the immediate future for Conte and for Kane?
In terms of how Conte compares to Klopp as a loser, at least when Conte's a bad loser, he often blames himself. Whereas when Klopp's a bad loser, he seems to blame the opposition for not allowing him to beat them.
Well, he seems to have done a fair amount of questioning whether the club is really good enough for managers such as Antonio Conte, has he not?
Well, after the Burnley game, I think he was blaming himself. But anyway, back to in terms of Conte's future, I agree. I think it's unlikely at this point that they will get fourth. I mean, they would have to beat Arsenal and for Arsenal to drop points in one of their other games. It increasingly looks like Everton will be mathematically safe on the final day of the season, which would make that game in theory easier for Arsenal. So I wouldn't bet on Tottenham getting fourth at the moment. But I have to say, I really have the impression that this week will have done a lot for wanting Conte to stay at Tottenham. Just because this is kind of why he took the job. You know, he spent the whole week working on his tactics to go face-to-face, as he puts it, against the best team in the world. And he got to go to Anfield. He got to, you know, in the technical area next to Klopp. He came up with a brilliant tactical plan. He almost won. He could have won the game. He actually drew the game. He managed to have a say in the title race. To use the language of the internet, he completely rattled Klopp afterwards, which I'm sure he would have taken great pleasure from.
Boyle is absolute piss.
He certainly has. He certainly has. Yeah. And I think for Conte, I imagine Conte takes a great deal of pride and validation from that. And he's probably thinking, well, you know, if he goes to manage PSG this summer, which I think is a possibility but probably not likely, would it be quite as fun to rattle Bruno Genesio and Christophe Galtier? Like, it's a lot more... Like, this is why people want to work in the Premier League, because they get to take on Pep and Klopp every, you know, twice a season at least. And so I think even if they come... I don't think it's automatic that if they come fifth, he'll walk. I think a lot of it will depend on what offers he's got. A lot of it will depend on what position they finish. Some of it will depend on what players they can sign. You know, Daniel Levy says they're able to sign in the summer. But I think after this week and seeing how kind of invigorated Conte looked by the challenge of the Liverpool game, I actually think he's likely to stay. In terms of Kane, well, I mean, Kane's situation is slightly different because he's got 2 years left in his contract. Conte's got 1 year left in his contract. Obviously, it's, you know, players can't and don't resign from contracts, so it's not really in, it's not in Kane's hands in quite the way it's in Conte's hands. City, I think, were never going to come back in for Kane this summer, Haaland or no Haaland. I don't think City enjoyed the transfer saga with Kane last year, getting a, you know, kind of public row with Tottenham, and they thought it was just, it was too messy, too difficult. So that was never going to be a starter. I think the one team who want Kane this summer is Manchester United. He is one of their priorities. I think the chances of Daniel Levy selling Kane to Man United are practically zero. Why would he sell his best player to a team below him in the league who are probably going to finish more or less around them?
If the price was
next
right,
season.
If the price was right, you know.
I just can't say it. I think Levy would rather. I could be surprised by this if Man United come in 150 million quid.
My question about that is, why would Harry Kane join Man United? I mean, he's too old to join Man United. You know, like, I mean, he maybe doesn't have enough seasons left to be sure that, like, he would one day play in a good Man United team. So I can't imagine he'd be too excited about that prospect.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Kane saying to Levy, I want to go to City because they're the best team in the world, that's a stronger argument than Kane saying, I want to go to Man United because they'll pay me a bit more and I'm kind of bored here. Yeah. So I think I'm sure he'll stay. I increasingly think Conte will stay, and I'm certain that Kane will stay. At this point,
that's all pretty good news for Tottenham. John, I wonder what your opinion is. If Klopp's comments about, you know, Conte's style and all this were sour grapes, as I was suggesting, what do you think underlay Pep Guardiola's post-match remarks in the golden afterglow of a 5-0 win? And he gave some interviews. I mean, he accused one of the journalists. I don't know if James Tucker is a Liverpool fan, but maybe
he supports Manchester United. Yeah.
he suggested James Tucker is a Man United. Well, you know, he once was a Man United supporter. He's now obviously a journalist.
Well, obviously, yeah, he's completely free of any bias, as is the case with all of us. Yes.
Of course, yeah, he said that he was a Liverpool fan, and then he was on BeIN Sports saying everyone in this country supports Liverpool. I saw Jonathan Liu. Jonathan Liu's tweet, which I thought was pretty accurate. Our next caller is Pep from Manchester. Pep, what's on your mind? <You know? laughs> And he's just going on about how everyone supports Liverpool, the media. I mean, I know that's not true. I mean, we all know this isn't true. Why is Pep saying it?
I suppose that Manchester City in itself still has this beating rebel heart, doesn't it? And it that's not changed since because of the Abu Dhabi takeover. That's been part of the club for as long as I can remember, which is now about 40 years of watching football. City have always had that outsider status, and I suppose the Abu Dhabi thing took it that nth degree further, and Pep Guardiola is now part of that. Now, I think, actually, if you look at the punditry lineup yesterday on Sky, you have Micah Richards. He's the City guy, okay. Whether Micah Richards is the best representation of Manchester City, that's for another day. And then you have Jamie Carragher, Liverpool through and through. Jamie Redknapp, you've got to say, pretty much Liverpool through and through. Commentating or punditry on a game in which Manchester City play Newcastle United. Could they not have got a Newcastle guy in there? You know, maybe Shay Given or someone who played for both clubs, something like that. There is this idea.
Maybe Shay recused himself, you know, with his heart torn in two.
Well,
like
absolutely,
that,
yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what happens to all of us. You know, even though the money might have been good, Shay just couldn't put himself through.
So
that.
You're saying you actually sympathise with Pep? You think there is a...
I do think that if you... I mean, Jose Mourinho said this a few years ago, didn't he? That he said, you know, when I am old and I retire... I mean, he's not quite done that yet. He said, maybe I will go on TV and I will be the Chelsea guy and argue for Chelsea because it's all Liverpool and Manchester United. And that's not far wrong, is it? Because you look at BT, there's a lot of ex-Man United players on there. You look at Sky, a lot of ex-Liverpool players on there. I mean, yeah, there are from all different clubs, but Liverpool and Manchester United do tend to dominate the media. Does that mean that everyone wants Liverpool to win the league and everything? Well, certainly not from where I'm coming from. Of course not. But there is, and Pep did appear to go down the fan forum route, in which, you know, everyone is against Manchester City. No one wants Manchester City to win everything.
I am amazed at the amount of people who have been predicting Liverpool will win the title, even in recent weeks.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and even, you know, I do TV coverage of the Saturday 3 o'clock games over here. And besides the aforementioned Shay Given, who has been tipping Man City, perhaps unsurprisingly, every other pundit, without any sort of skin in the game, has been saying, oh yeah, Liverpool's momentum, Liverpool this, Liverpool that. And every time they say it, I'm like, what are you talking about? Man City would have to slip up and they're not going to. And I actually thought the feature in the week made it even less likely they were going to slip up this weekend. So I don't know, there's definitely a leaning, certainly in recent weeks, I've noticed a leaning towards some sort of... I don't know, there was just this sense that Liverpool are somehow going to win this league, which didn't make a huge... I'm not saying all these pundits are being biased towards Liverpool, but I did find it striking in recent weeks how many people were saying Liverpool were the team who were going to win the title, when clearly Man City were and will win all the rest of their games.
Yeah, that's... Wow, good, big call. Well, good. I like it. No, I suppose... Is it not a thing that I think people maybe... the pundits and... maybe look at Manchester City and think, this maybe isn't the most complete Manchester City team, whereas Liverpool is almost, seems to have a stronger squad with the addition of Luis Diaz, and maybe not thinking about the way things are going, because, yeah, you look at the final three games City have got to play and you'd think, yeah, they'd probably win those and win the league. We think of City, of this idea of them not having a striker. Well, that's going to be sorted with them signing Haaland. Maybe City aren't as strong as they might be, but are still better than Liverpool in the league. But Liverpool have swept up in other competitions, so maybe that it all adds to that, and people are buying into the and I hate this word, it's always used, and I don't think it's the narrative that, yeah, Liverpool are going to win the quadruple, it's going to be the greatest story of all time.
So you think people were saying this might happen just because it would be the more exciting and sensational outcome, rather than City simply closing it out in a City-ish way?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Yeah, I mean, I think Pep, the way that he says it, and the way that, you know, when he says those type of things, you know, the eyes are wild, and he has that really intense, you know, and he's scratching, and he's nervous, and he's fidgeting, he's saying this, and you think he's really lost it. I don't think it wasn't quite a Kevin Keegan. No. He was making a point that I think if you go into the Manchester City back office, that will be how they think about things. And if you speak to the Manchester City fans, they certainly think that. And in a way, he was almost pulling the City Nation together, this sort of this siege mentality. The siege mentality is a big part of what we've seen over the Premier League years and before that, of course.
Yeah.
And we see it with Alex Ferguson. We've seen it with Wenger. That's how it operates. And I think Pep, in his own way, was more controlled than is being portrayed.
But, he has adapted, I suppose. He has really, you know, yesterday Pep Guardiola truly became a Man City manager, you know, by kind of literally adopting the Man City underdog mindset, even though they're no longer really underdogs. But, Jackie, you know, when you were saying earlier, you know, Klopp is the biggest loser. We suggested maybe Conte, or the worst loser, not the biggest loser. the tallest loser. Is Guardiola maybe a little bit too comfortable with losing these days? I saw his press conference on Friday. This was his pre-Newcastle press conference. And what it really was a sort of considered post-Real Madrid press conference. I have to say, I thought he was very easy on himself. You know what I mean? Like, there was all this sort of like, well, you know, is it failure if we continually don't win the Champions League? And I was kind of sitting there thinking, yeah, I mean, that's just what the word means. I mean, there's not necessarily much judgment implicit there. It's just, it is a failure. You know, you failed to achieve your objectives for year after year after year in this competition. That's failure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, as ever, with City in the Champions League, I think, Each of their defeats is explicable from, you know, the kind of random luck and variance that happens in knockout football, and the quality of the opposition. But you put, what, six consecutive years of them together, and suddenly it doesn't look like variance so much anymore. You know, it looks like the brittleness of the team, the lack of game management, the you know, conceding too many goals at crucial moments and not taking their own chances. And so that's why I think, you know, Guardiola doesn't really deserve any more benefit of the doubt when it comes to this kind of, when it comes to, you know, the Real Madrid elimination the other night or any of the other eliminations, just because so much of what we saw in that Real Madrid game was, you know, variations on stuff that we've seen in the past, whether it was Monaco, Tottenham, Liverpool, Lyon, Chelsea. Am I missing one? I'm not sure. I think is that the whole run of them.
I think that's the more.
Yeah.
because he did say something, Jack, which I thought was extraordinary. At some quite early point, someone said to him, you know, do you think this group of players is capable of winning, this squad is capable of winning the Champions League? And his answer was, I don't know. And I just thought, really? I mean, I know. The answer is yes, they are capable of winning it. I mean, you know, capable of winning it is obviously a different question from have won it. I mean, that seemed to be, I mean, they have, okay, they haven't won it. You can't say they have won it yet, but are they capable of winning it? Clearly. I mean, you know, they're finishing ahead of Liverpool and Chelsea. These are two recent winners of this tournament. They're regularly finishing ahead of them, beating them in league play. Clearly they're capable of winning it. So why doesn't he just say it? It's because, I mean, it sounded to me as though to say that puts the pressure on himself.
Yeah, completely. I mean, if this City squad are not capable of winning it, then I don't see how any group of players anywhere could be capable of winning it. Like, not only are they what one of the most expensive squads ever put together, but they're also about to win their fourth Premier League out of 5 years. Like, if you know, they are clearly objectively, you know, one of the strongest teams ever. I thought the most interesting thing that Guardiola said over the last few days, which speaks to like why maybe City didn't. Why maybe City didn't win the tie against Real Madrid was his reference to the kind of the power of Real Madrid's history, and you know, the fact that I think he listed Di Stefano, Raul, Puskas, Cristiano Ronaldo as players who'd already done it for Real Madrid, and he suggested that gave Real Madrid players an extra edge in the crunch moments of that tie.
Why didn't it give them an edge against Chelsea? You know, like the previous, like that's just such nonsense from Guardiola, letting himself off the hook. You know, oh, well, what do you expect me to do?
We're allowed to talk about that, Ken. We're allowed to talk about the ghosts, but the manager of the team probably shouldn't.
You know, Puskas and Di Stefano is there, you know, and you know, what can we do against that? Well, like Chelsea did, you know, they beat Real Madrid in the previous season. You know, Chelsea don't have a history to compare to Real Madrid's, but they do have a team to compare to them right now, which is what matters.
I don't know. I actually think, I don't necessarily think that Guardiola was talking nonsense there. Just because, I mean, the fact is that even though Real Madrid lost to Chelsea last year, they do win, they win more than they should at this level. Like, they've won far more Champions Leagues over the last 10 years than you would expect, given, you know, the churn they've had in managers and the holes they've got in their squad and so on. So I thought the fact that Guardiola would say that about City, because the obvious implication of that is, you know, City players did not feel, you know, maybe when Grealish missed that late chance, for example, it was because he didn't have that same weight of history behind him, because he was only thinking of, I don't know, Lee Bradbury or whoever. Maybe that would, maybe for Guardiola to admit that that was a kind of, that this kind of hole or gap exists in Manchester City, or this kind of absence, which means that they don't have that same power behind them in these big matches. I thought that was a really interesting admission of weakness. And it sounded to me like, and I, you know, maybe I'm overinterpreting here, but it sounded to me like the kind of thing that that's been on the back of his mind gnawing away at him. And he kind of accidentally let it slip the other day.
I love it, Jack. I love it. You believe in ghosts and history and all these sort of things.
I never used to, but having watched City
and Real Madrid in the Champions League
every year over the last, 6 years on the spin, I now think all this stuff is actually true, isn't it?
Ken is seething there on the other end. It's just
an excuse, John, surely. I mean, it's like, what do you expect me to do? I'm only the Man City manager.
Well, yeah. There's a bit of a, again, sorry, we mentioned him again. Jose Mourinho, football heritage type of thing. There wasn't
Everyone supports Liverpool except for the you know, the spiritual realm where everyone is on the side of Real Madrid.
Yeah, so Pep is becoming Jose, which is you know, I'm here for that. I'm really looking forward to that. I think there is something to it, you know, because it's difficult to create, you know, the idea of the super club. It's really difficult to create that. It took a long time for Chelsea to get there, if you think about it. Winning leagues, they won serial leagues, and then it took... They suffered, didn't they, in the Champions League and up until 2012. They had some, you know, horrific defeats, not dissimilar to those that have befallen City. And there is this idea, you know, with Chelsea, you had this idea that, you know, you'd have John Terry, you'd have Frank Lampard, and then you'd look back at the past and it was, you know, Peter Osgood 30-odd years before. City, there, you know, what jokes about Lee Bradbury, but, you know, you're going back even further to Franny Lee or something like that. There is this idea that Real Madrid think they should win those competitions, and Manchester City hope that they can win that competitions. And I think that Pep was given this custom-designed club by Abu Dhabi in Manchester City, taking over a club that, you know, had previously was a had a proud history, but was a, you know, a provincial club, the second biggest club in a city, and was able to create it into his own being, his own entity. But within that, it also holds his own hang-ups, and one of his hang-ups is obviously about the Champions League and not being able to win it without Lionel Messi or Xavi or Iniesta. And I think that at another club, I mean, he didn't manage it with Bayern Munich either, who did have that weight of history. I think he is making excuses for himself, but I think there is something to that certain clubs believe that they should be there in certain competitions. I mean, Liverpool are in the final of the Champions League. Liverpool fans think that they should be in the final of the European Cup, and so do Real Madrid fans. And Manchester City, I still don't think they believe it.
Yeah, seems crazy to me, but there you go. While we're speaking about otherworldly forces, what about the Paul Pogba, who's been something of a ghost-like presence in the Manchester United squad in recent times, possibly joining Manchester City? Is this a real story, John, or is this Man City just having a laugh with Manchester United at Manchester United's expense?
Well, I was, funny enough, this morning I was just watching the Sky debate between Micah Richards, Jamie Redknapp, and Jamie Carragher, and Jamie Carragher was held my view. Jamie Redknapp called it a no-brainer. I'll leave that there.
The no-brainer was, of course, you would sign
Pogba. Of course,
Pogba.
Yeah. And Micah Richards was of a similar view. Listen, the other week I tweeted that I thought that Paul Pogba was officially the worst signing in Manchester United's history. Now, it's said with a slight tongue-in-cheek, but I'm still getting abuse for this. If you get 2 or 3 weeks later, but actually, when you add it up, it's sort of true. You know, 89 million, the ability to lead the new Manchester United generation as they recover from the Ferguson fallout, and that has not happened. And Pogba is a peripheral player in a peripheral team, appears his. His celebrants, the people that make excuses for them, would suggest, okay, well, United never really set up the team to suit him. Except Manchester United played loads of different formations over the years and none of them seemed to suit him.
But did the club not let him down, John? You know, just bad managerial appointments, sort of clueless general direction.
You could argue that, but Liverpool let down Steven Gerrard, didn't they? We repeated, and Steven Gerrard was still the top three players in the Premier League throughout that time. You can have it hasn't worked out for him. Is he a good player for Manchester City? I don't really see how he fits into that team. What's the gap that they've got in that team that's coming up? I suppose maybe a Fernandinho replacement. Obviously, Fernandinho's leaving at the end of the season, but Rodri seems to be pretty good in that role.
Yeah.
Is it one of those midfield players? Well, he's not as good as any of those. So you're bringing in Paul Pogba as a squad player. Now, does the Paul Pogba as squad player, does that work in terms of his ego? Maybe not, but there was one point actually that I think Jamie Carragher raised was that, you may remember, there was a row not so long ago when Mino Raiola suggested that Pep wanted Paul Pogba to sign Now Mino's no longer around.
Specifically, didn't Guardiola said it in a press conference to kind of get back at Mino. I can't remember what Mino had said to annoy him, but Guardiola basically dropped it in a press conference that he'd been offered Pogba.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, yeah. So maybe Pep is a long-standing admirer of Paul Pogba, and I noticed that Sam Lee in The Athletic suggested that Pep has a Twitter account these days, an incognito one. Maybe he was one of those people sending me abuse for saying that Paul Pogba was...
Jack, just quickly on that. The question, John, asked, you know, where are the gaps in the squad? Whatever about Pogba, I don't really see where he fits in. Haaland is coming in to fill a pretty obvious gap. You know, maybe a gap that Guardiola's... It's a really interesting signing, that one, I think, because of the way that Guardiola's ideal of football actually doesn't seem to include a player like Haaland, who is like a really pure number nine, an absolute power and pace merchant who loves to run and smash the ball into the net. How do you think their relationship is going to go? I mean, when Jack Grealish joined Man City last season, I think there was a little bit of, are Jack and Pep going to get on? And I think at the moment it's still, we're not really sure. When you look at Erling Haaland, what do you think? Do you see a Pep Guardiola player?
I haven't seen a huge amount of him, but I've seen him a fair bit for Dortmund. And no, not really. Like, he's not very technically smooth, is he, Haaland?
No.
And Guardiola, you know, we all know that how technically precise Guardiola wants his players to be. He also wants centre forwards who are very, you know, who are very selfless and hardworking for the team. Don't forget that when he showed up in 2016, there was a big question about how he'd get on with Sergio Aguero, and he didn't play Aguero for quite a lot of big games in the 16-17 season. And it actually felt like Aguero would get phased out quickly. But obviously Aguero managed to prove himself to Guardiola to the extent that he played almost consistently until, you know, injuries more or less stopped him season before last. So I don't know. I mean, he's going to have to play because they're going to pay him so much money. But it will clearly change how City play. That said, I mean, I think City played their best football this season at the start of the season when they had Phil Foden up front. But since they've moved Phil Foden out to the left and had, you know, either Jesus or Sterling through the middle more recently, I don't think they've been as good. So I do think they could do with someone there, but it will obviously like kind of clog up the fast moving of the different bits somewhat. But that maybe in net it will still be a good thing.
Okay, well, the worst loser in the Premier League, the worst signing in Manchester United history. Some hot takes there. Thank you to our two callers today, to Jack and to John. Thank you very much, guys.
Cheers.
Lord, they're up down the court on beach.
Caroline, the arse has ripped out of me trousers here.
Could have been Pancho McMahon or Soso Cooney, who lived in Oliver Bond.
I got stopped and searched three times on the way in on the boardwalk.
Well, the big 99 with loads of raspberry sauce on it.
Louis. That is the business. Oh, jeez, that's class. It's
absolutely class.
I never asked you about this Pogba to City story, Ken. What do you reckon?
Well, actually, since we recorded the piece with John and Jack, I see that Jack's colleague at The Athletic, David Ornstein, is saying Paul Pogba will not be joining Man City. He seriously considered it, but he's opting against it. Juventus, PSG, Real Madrid, currently main contenders. It just bewilders me how he's got such great options. But according to David Ornstein, that's not happening. Although he's also saying that the Haaland thing is going to happen. It's a done deal. So that was the other thing we mentioned in that piece, that I was like, I'm not sure if it's a done deal. Well, David Ornstein says this deal is done. Haaland will be playing for Manchester City next season, which leaves Real Madrid. I don't know if you saw Diego Torres' most recent story.
Don't follow Diego's work as closely as you do, Ken.
Well, listen, let me tell you what he's been up to. He's been reporting on the situation between Mbappe and Real Madrid. And I thought the story is remarkable just for the figures involved. Kylian Mbappe's lawyers were perplexed when in mid-March, after the elimination of PSG from the Champions League at the Bernabeu, Real Madrid presented them with the fourth and last formal offer to hire him. 180 million euros in concept of transfer bonus, a salary of 40 million euros net per year, and 50% of the benefits derived from the transfer of his image rights. Sources close to the player say weeks before his advisors that weeks before his advisors had considered the most generous proposal in the history of football, thanks to the commitment to pay a premium that equaled the price of his transfer in 2021, that's the 180 million euro signing on fee, suddenly left them cold. The difference between satisfaction and disappointment was made by the wedge of image rights. Madrid, as is the norm since Florentino Perez assumed the presidency in 2000, demanded the transfer of half of all the amounts generated by the footballer through sponsorships from the date of his hiring. Something that, according to his lawyers, completely transformed the scene. So much so that a month and a half later, the French striker is seriously considering renewing with PSG. So this puzzles me. I don't understand this. So he's basically saying that the offer was great, apart from until the point when Real Madrid suddenly came in with this, oh, and we'll be taking 50% of your image rights as well. Now, what's that actually worth? As this article continues, a basic pillar of Mbappe's heritage was constituted by his advertising appeal for brands such as EA, Nike, or Hublot. While his salary at PSG didn't exceed 20 million euros, they calculated he would bill 40 million in sponsorships this season and could rise to 70 million per season in the coming years. So basically, this 70 million that Real Madrid are demanding 50% of that. And suddenly the Mbappe's team are like, hang on a second, this isn't good. But what I don't understand about this is how could they have been unaware that this is what Real Madrid do? Just it makes no sense to me. Like, Real Madrid have been doing this as a standard for 20 years. So why are they surprised? You know, I don't get that. Like, how could they not have known that? So basically Mbappe's like, well, if I give up half my sponsorship money to you, I could end up losing money by doing this. You know, maybe especially when you consider, I love this sentence, the princes of Qatar, owners of PSG, presented a triple alternative that fascinated the lawyers. Imagine the lawyers just being fascinated by this, just like, this proposal fascinates us. If he agreed to extend the contract for another 2 years, they would pay him a bonus of 80 million euros, plus a net salary of 40 million for the first and 50 million for the second year. If he renewed for 3 years, they pay him 40 million net the first, 50 million from the second, with a premium, a signing on bonus of 130 million. If he renewed for more than 3 years, they would allow him to set the expiration date, pay him a 200 million euro premium. And from the fourth season, taking advantage of the end of Neymar's contract, he would open a gap in the way they would ensure him a salary of 60 million net, all while reserving the right to exploit 100% of his image rights. These numbers are insane. Like, it's absolutely crazy. Like, how much, I haven't even sat here and worked out how much that is sort of before tax.
Nah, my mind is boggled.
It's like, I mean, a 200 million signing on bonus, it's 400 million euros, and then 40, then it would be 40, 50, 50, 60. I mean, that's another 200, that's another. So it's an 800 million euro contract over 4 years, for instance. 800 million over 4 years is what they're supposedly offering. So Real Madrid really need to big up that history stuff, I think, because the you know, the cash side of things are very much still in PSG's side.
Big Premier League games on during the week, and we're going to be live from London. If you fancy hearing all our coverage of all that, please sign up to secondcabins.com. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A,
B-I, and then peace with an I. Thank you so much.